Hello, and welcome to the Sable Offshore Corp 2Q 2026 earnings call. All participants will be in listen-only during the prepared remarks. We will then go into a Q&A session. Also, as a reminder, this conference is being recorded today. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. Harrison Breaux, you may begin.
Thank you, Alice. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our second quarter 2026 earnings conference call. Joining me today to discuss our results are Jim Flores, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, Caldwell Flores, President and Chief Operating Officer, Gregory Patrinely, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, and Anthony Duenner, Executive Vice President, General Counsel, and Secretary, as well as various other members of the Sable team. Please refer to our website to download a copy of our new investor presentation posted yesterday, as well as our recently filed financial statements, which will both be discussed today. We will actively display the presentation on this webcast and reference certain items by page number, and then proceed to Q&A. We will also be making statements during this call that are forward-looking. These statements are based on current expectations and assumptions and are subject to risk and uncertainties. Actual results could differ materially from those described in the forward-looking statements because of factors discussed in our earnings release, in our investor presentation, in the comments made during this conference call, in our most recent Form 10-K, Forms 10-Q, and other reports and filings with the SEC. We do not undertake any duty to update any forward-looking statements. With that, I will turn it over to Jim Flores to begin going through the investor presentation. Jim?
Thanks, Harrison, and good morning, everyone. As promised, we said we'd have a conference call at some point in time. This is our first conference call for earnings from Sable Offshore, so welcome, everyone. After looking at page three of the presentation, it's more of the summary stuff you've seen before, but page four is the milestones achieved, the next steps. And we've listed them all since the beginning of this saga in 25. And then the three updated ones: restarted production with Platform Heritage in April 26, refinance the senior secured term note July of 26, and commence the commodity hedging program July 26. The next steps are restart production at Platform Hondo, which is expected at the end of September 26, so we get a full fourth quarter. And establish full 3P reserve report expected first quarter 27. And then we refinance the senior secured Term B note and convertible senior unsecured notes and potentially install a full sales buoy at San Ynez unit and continue to legally protect Sable's vested interests and pursue all monetary damages. Those are five big milestones ahead of us, and we expect the next 12 months to achieve those. On page five, which is our corporate update. We're operations we're going to go through extensively today. The second quarter 2026 exit rate oil sales are 40,000 barrels a day. It represents a huge growth in what our oil sales have been prior to that. We kicked off a wireline campaign now that we have all the wells open or potentially open to mitigate water influx and really try to trim up our production to where we're being as efficiently as possible. And we're working feverishly on Platform Hondo. Platform Hondo is a 45-year-old platform that's in bad need of restoration. That's probably the best word for it. But we're doing great work there. We've got a great team and so forth. And just hope we can hit that timing in September. And then we're working with refineries in the downstream. We brought in a large quantity of oil for the California onshore refinery market. And we're working our way through that process of making sure everybody's getting comfortable with our oil, the quality of it, and also the volume of it. And we'll go into detail on that in another slide. For regulatory legal, we continue to wait on U.S. District Court for their findings and also the Ninth Circuit as we've been side by side with the U.S. federal government, working along with the Justice Department to be in a situation where all of the federal regulations that we're adhering to as Sable Offshore are being recognized through the courts. We'll continue to update that as goes, but there's no update today from that standpoint. On the finance side, we completed completed the refinancing of July 2nd, 2026. Proceeds to retire the former ExxonMobil senior term note. That was really key because they had a lot of restrictions, the ExxonMobil senior term note, that we now have a little more flexibility with the current financial structure. It's not optimal for us at this point, but it was a big step for us. And the commodity hedging program, one of the things we put in place, you'll see we've got some floor protection for a significant portion of our production. Just in case all the volatility goes the wrong direction, we'll be protected. And then and we'll look at further balance sheet optimization in 27 once all our wells are on and our reserve reports out there, and we're at full power. On the on page four, Gregory, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you take us through the financing overview we did and a couple other financial slides.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Jim. So page six, the refinancing overview, like Jim just mentioned, we completed our bridge refinancing in early July. That fully satisfied and took out the ExxonMobil seller note, seller financing, the prior senior secured term loan. We did so with a series of transactions, starting with the $675 million senior secured term loan B. This term loan B has a maturity of December 15th, 2028, and it was structured as a fully amortizing loan through the maturity of the security itself. So that's fully amortizing through a mandatory amortization of 2.5% per quarter in the back half of this year, stepping up to 5% per quarter beginning in 2027. It also includes a 100% excess cash flow sweep feature, which could potentially accelerate that amortization depending on the prevailing commodity prices. It does have a 1.25 times MOIC minimum takeout, and so we'll certainly be looking to delever on the amortization front and the excess cash flow sweep front. But as Jim mentioned, when we achieve our additional milestones and get a full 3P reserve report, we will be pursuing phase two of the refinancing efforts. So I think we're very happy to complete this bridge financing, satisfy our obligations with the seller note, ExxonMobil, but we certainly have room to improve on the interest rate front, interest rate reduction, and we look forward to approaching the market here in 2027. In addition to the $675 million senior secured term loan B, we issued about $345 million of convertible senior unsecured notes. Those notes, the five-year notes, July 1, 2031 maturity, 6.5% coupon with a $4 per share initial conversion price. So overall, we lowered our weighted average cost of debt, but we certainly have a room to improve and looking forward to further optimizing the balance sheet. In conjunction with those debt securities, we put in place a zero borrowing base, $500 million revolving credit facility. That was designed to allow us to commence that hedging program and fulfill our obligations under the term loan deed, meet those minimum hedging requirements by hedging 100% of our Netherland, Sewell projected PDP production. We have the ability to hedge beyond those minimums, and we're currently evaluating adding additional volumes, which we'll get into. Slide seven is a brief overview of our updated financial guidance, which includes our sales and cost guidance. Like Jim mentioned, we do have slightly elevated short-term marketing and GP&T deducts reflected here for the back half of 26. We'll get into why we think these issues will be alleviated here in the near term, but it's part and parcel of the California energy market with all the regulatory headwinds and constraints. Our capital structure, as we illustrated on the prior page, an enterprise value of $1.9 billion, equity value of $911 million at the $4.75 share price as of August 7th. Our financial objectives, as we mentioned, we fully plan to delever under the terms of the new senior secured term loan B and or refinance and take out that paper as soon as possible after we issue the full 3P reserve report, where we get credit for all of the PDP reserves that we will bring online at Hondo here in September, and also all of our PUD locations, which were not included in the prior interim Netherland Sewell report. We'll continue to optimize the balance sheet with the phase two of our refinancing, lower our cost of debt, and increase our maturity runway beyond 2028. And we will certainly opportunistically manage the convertible notes to minimize any potential dilution there. We have the ability to do that with cash. We'll progress our rating agency discussions in advance of this phase two global refinancing of the balance sheet, and look forward to continuing those discussions as well. Long term, we still have a one times net debt to EBITDA leverage target. We fully plan to hit that metric. Like I mentioned, we're going to advance the hedging strategy by adding additional floor pricing protection, likely in the $65 to $70 per barrel range, to protect the downside relative to our current volumes. And then long term, post phase two of the global refinancing, we plan to implement our shareholder return program and focus on reducing the share count with share repurchases and instituting a dividend at the appropriate time. Slide eight is our unlevered free cash flow guidance at strip pricing. So we're basically walking through and doing a little bit of math for you here, which leads into to the following slide and the value proposition that Sable Offshore creates with the free cash flow profile today. So even with all of the marketing and crude quality constraints, near-term constraints, we're still projected to generate midpoint of $152 million of unlevered free cash flow for the back half of 2026 and into 2027, based on a Brent oil price of $75 a barrel. We're projected to generate over $500 million of unlevered free cash flow. Slide nine, we believe that the current trading valuation of Sable doesn't fully reflect the projected earnings power, the cash flow profile, and the capital allocation of the company. And we think this analysis on slide nine illustrates that. When you take a look at our levered free cash flow per share, on the top left here, for estimated 2027 levered free cash flow per share, $2.19. And you compare that to our peer free cash flow yield of relatively 14%, it's implying a share price of over $15 a share. And that represents a 220% premium to our share price as of August 7th, which is about $4.75. So we think, on a basic, outstanding share count basis, and even on a fully diluted share count basis, which includes all of the potential shares from from the convertible notes, which we believe would be unrealistic, you still have 125% premium today's price. So we think the value proposition on our shares is real, and we look forward to moving forward as we ramp up this asset. Because remember, restarting an asset of this quality and in this scale, the toughest part is it's like flying a plane. The hardest parts are takeoff and landing. Right now we're on the ascent, and we're very much looking forward to getting into the fourth quarter and into 2027, cruising at altitude and attacking our financial objectives that are all laid out in front of us. Slide 10, this is our current hedging program. We've layered in costless collars, which we were required to place 5 days after the closing of the refinancing on July 2nd, 2026. So for the third quarter 26, we've got collars hedged about 26,000 barrels a day, growing to 29,000 barrels a day in the fourth quarter, all with $65 floor pricing. So in the back half of this year, our ceiling is about $89.39 on Brent. And in 27, recall, these are 100% PDP hedged volumes. We've got 25,000 barrels a day, and in 2028, 21,000 barrels a day. We were required to layer in that 100% of PDP volumes per the term loan through maturity. That's why we've layered in these collars. We think they give us solid floor pricing protection to the downside, but also allow us to participate on the upside and certainly with the unhedged volumes as well.
Great, Greg. On the midstream of Brent crude marketing overview on page 11, it's a lot of moving parts here with the California market, but more importantly for us, at SYU, we don't have platform Hondo on, which is our easternmost platform. And if you look at the field from west to east, the higher sulfur contents are to the west and the lower sulfur contents to the east. So once we get all the wells on and so forth, we should be able to mitigate most of the sulfur deducts that we got hit with here in the second quarter, and we'll also be dealing with in the third quarter. And plus some chemical things we're trying as well that should work out well. We really appreciate all the refiners working with us because of the magnitude of the flows out of our field. They were surprised and we're from the upside, but we had to make a lot of movements around there. And Chevron's been over backwards trying to help us get all the crude moved. With that, we have a plan to debottleneck that with Chevron starting in September, as well as two other refineries that are looking at taking our crude and so forth. So we'll have ample output in the Los Angeles refining basin going through the Plains Line 2000. Additionally, there's additional pipelines that we're looking at going north. Now the San Pablo Bay pipeline looks like it's going to be in service. Thank you. Thanks to California Resources. We'll look at being a third-party customer to those guys as well as another outlet for excess crude. We've got to solve those situations for us to put drilling rigs out here and start increasing production. We want to do that sooner rather than later, so we want as many multiple outlets as possible when we hit capacity in certain areas like going south of Line 2000. And then finally, we're moving along with our legal strategy toward getting an offshore buoy off of Platform Harmony and SYU. It's premature to discuss the ins and outs of that, but that's still hot on our deal, and looking forward to some good work out of Washington, D.C. to get that in a position where we can start working on that and get it built and funded here in 27 for 28 as a long-term potential safety valve to make sure we have the best marketing for you. So all that's in progress. We're working hard on it and so forth. And we feel like here in the third quarter, it's going to be kind of a low point on the marketing, all the demurrage charges and things of that nature. And then fourth quarter one, we should be improving. It's certainly going into 27. The same thing we're hearing from our refining partners as well. On page 12, I mentioned the buoy. We have an illustration where it's sitting off a Platform Harmony. This is more of a cartoon at this point in time, but you can see the aspect. It gives us a lot of flexibility bypassing the onshore market if we have to, and give us a better marketing opportunities here with waterborne crude than the captured California market. Page 13 is just remind everybody the significance of this asset. The asset has not changed. Prices have changed. Marketing has changed. Legal's changed, but this has not changed. San Ynez unit is still the number one field in the United States based on estimated recovered reserves and cumulative production. It ranks number four. And page 14, one aspect we're working on is our total reserves out here. We've got a tremendous reservoir that has only had 25% of the proved reserves, ultimate recovery, taken out the 671 million barrels, or 4.3 of the total barrels produced to date. And we think we have about 10% remaining barrels, about double that amount, which gets up to about 1,517,000, which is 899 of the primary forecast. And then our heavy oil forecast below 13 gravity oil, 9 to 13 gravity, another 618 million barrels. So we have a lot of oil to get out of the ground. We're glad we're getting started finally on it. On page 15 is our operating development plan going forward. You see it's very light on capital because of all the wireline work and so forth. Caldwell and his team have commenced the wireline work where we're doing a lot of water mitigation on on Harmony and Heritage. Some wells with a high water cut, we're either sliding sleeves on them, putting through tubing plugs, trying to shut off some of the water from the lowest zone and allow the upper zone oil to flow better. We're in the middle of that program and look forward to some really good results, and also help relieve a lot of our handling capacity issues because of all the, so we get 100% of the wells on production by the fourth quarter. Right now, we're constrained for because of pump size at Heritage, and also we're not making enough gas at Harmony and Heritage to run all the compressors. We have to get all the wells on, so it's a chicken and egg deal. So we shut off some of the water that we want to process onshore, then we'll have room for these wells to bring on more gas to get all the compressors on, and with the new pumps to be able to pump it out. So the field is coming on spectacularly. We're still seeing no decline in our production volumes. The wells are very strong and so forth. It's just getting consistent topside and unrestrained topside throughput, which is the main goal going forward. On page 16, we talked about the previous perf ads and so forth that we've done at about 600 barrels a day per perf ad, and we've got several of those planned for 26 and also for 27 that are coming on. So we're accelerating that, and we look forward to having a lot of those behind us and enjoying that production starting in 27. On page 17, as an illustration of the massive reservoir we have, covering 77,000 acres. So this over 1,400 feet of pay, and many places the upper silicious hadn't even been perforated, and that's easy stuff we're going for, as well as the massive Church got tremendous reserves based on development drilling, and then the heavy oil stuff we haven't touched yet, and that's for down the road. On page 18 is our initial drilling inventory just in the upper silicious. You think about it, you have these 500 million barrel oil fields sitting on top of each other, there's three of them, with the upper silicious, the massive Chert, and the heavy oil and so forth. And we're just in the next 20 years or just be drilling the wells for the upper silicious. So we have a long inventory, multi-decade inventory to drill and produce, but we need to make sure everything's running topside in first class shape. On page 19, you see the investment highlights. You know, we've transitioned to federal oversight successfully. We're primed for low cost production growth, so forth. We're able to control our costs. You can see that in what our CapEx looks like going forward and our ability to maintain production, if not grow it, here in the near term. We have a large development inventory. Once we get our marketing, debottlenecks and so forth, we'll be looking at putting some rigs out there and, be able to develop that with our large production base, shallow decline. Therefore, our maintenance CapEx is very low, high operational control. We own 100%. And control and operate everything. And then linking our crude sales to Brent is important. We just got to get rid of the discounts. Our safety and stewardship is outstanding. We continue to pride ourselves there and have continued to get rewarded for that going forward. And we're going to continue a conservative financial policy by amortizing our debt until we refinance it. Everything else is in the appendix. Happy to take questions. Harris, I'll turn it over to you guys and we'll get some questions and make sure everybody knows what's going on.
Sure. Thank you, Jim. At this time, we will now answer questions from analysts. Please use the raise hand feature in the webcast. I'll pause a moment while the queue forms. Alice, please proceed with Q&A.
Thanks, Harrison. As a reminder, at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please click on the raise hand button, which can be found on the black bar at the bottom of your screen. When it is your turn, you'll receive a message on your screen from the host allowing you to talk, and then you will hear your name called. Please accept, unmute your audio, and ask your question. We will wait one moment to allow the queue to form. Our first question will come from Lloyd Byrne at Jefferies. Please unmute your line and ask your question.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for all the information, guys. Well, can you just walk through the discounts a little bit more? And then what happens what the discount looks like when you can blend the sulfur? And then maybe, Jim, also, what are the other options for lowering that discount going forward? And does the SPR play into that? Just how do we think about those on a going concern basis? And then I have one quick follow-up.
Well, with the sulfur and the demurrage and also the differential and the transportation totals up to $30 a barrel discount. okay? The sulfur is about 10 bucks out of it, and sulfur and demurrage is about 10 bucks out of it. We see that being mitigated, as I said, as we bring on platform Hondo to get our fuel-wide production down below our penalty level, as well as some of the chemical stuff we're doing. As well as the demurrage, we had to cover Chevron's costs as they turned tankers around and take our production as quick as they did. So we have one more of those to do in the third quarter. So I think here in the second and third quarter, those costs are going to be pretty steady. And then going forward in the fourth quarter, that's where we'll see the relief from the demurrage and also the sulfur get back down to around $20 a barrel. And that's what reflecting the guidance. Now, the $20 a barrel is going to be market driven because you've got $3 of transportation and $17 worth of diffs at the refinery. We're going to continue to work with the refiners to see if we can't mitigate that, but we're not forecasting any change at this point in time.
Okay. All right. Thanks. And then can you just talk a little bit about what 28's capital program looks like? I mean, obviously, you lowered the capital spent this year, but and then raise it a little bit in 27. How does 28 look and kind of the trajectory going forward there?
It's page 15, Lloyd. Assuming we don't refinance the debt, page 15, the 28 capital look a lot like 27 and 26, so forth. So, it would strictly be wildland work and so forth. If we're able to successfully refinance, then we'd be looking at putting some rigs out there and growing production and accelerating our rig program. But it all depends on where we are financially and what our balance sheet looks like. Gregory?
Yeah, Lloyd, great question. Remember, we have capital governors for 27 and 28 for the new senior secured term loan B of $100 million a year. So beyond 2026, we're capped out without, absent some waiver at $100 million for 27 and 28. And like Jim mentioned, we go refinance that. We'll have some freedom to adjust the capital budget.
That'd be a big, good reason to do it. Also, we have a carve out of $150 million for a buoy if we get in position to build that.
Correct.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Sure.
Our next question comes from Michael Farrow at Pickering Energy Partners. You may now unmute your audio and ask your question.
Good morning to the Sable team. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. All right, Michael.
Great. All right. Thanks for the confirmation. Look, I think it's safe to say it's been a pretty eventful second quarter, but maybe we can just start with the production ramp. We recognize there's no guidebook to restarting an asset like the Santinez unit, and this is the first for the Sable team as well. But the production ramp does seem to be going a little slower than expectations, at least versus our expectations. So I think what we and others would like is just more confirmation and clarity on what the economics and cash flows are going to look like when the asset reaches its plateau. We appreciate the guidance update and we can kind of piece through the math, but just how confident are you in achieving the run rate operating costs of roughly 160 and 190 million next year after operating costs were nearly 95 million before considering the demurrage charges in 2Q? And maybe it's just something as simple as having fewer employees and less work on the platforms once reaching a steady state. So anything you could provide detail-wise on the operations that would increase confidence in margin guidance going forward would be helpful.
Yeah, Michael, great question. I think the key point here is it's not a production issue, right? It's a third-party sales constraints that have not allowed us to sell all of the barrels that we've produced. The wells are performing outstanding, like Jim laid out. And I think you've seen that detailed in our earnings materials. We've been filling inventory and in our 540,000 barrel storage tanks at Las Flores Canyon and trying to deplete that inventory and have run into short-term throughput constraints due to third parties. So that's part of it. So I feel very, very comfortable about our ability to hit our production targets. And as these short-term constraints on the throughput side, both on midstream and the downstream, get alleviated here in the short term, as in the next several weeks to months, by September, we feel like there won't be a disconnect between our ability to produce barrels and our ability to sell the barrels that we produce. That's one thing. The second item is on the operating cost front. Remember, we have a tremendous amount of contract labor and other labor dedicated to restarting these three platforms, which we're still in the process of in terms of platform Hondo, right? We won't be in the restart phase forever. And what we're projecting here is we start coming out of that restart phase in the fourth quarter. So the reason why we provided the 2027 guidance was to give you a look at what fully ramped production and sales would look like with a more of a steady state operating cost posture. And so I would say 27 is a great look. What 27 doesn't include, importantly, is any type of waterborne marketing optionality, any type of additional marketing leverage. It doesn't include potential chemical solutions that we're looking at to reduce our sulfur content, which, you know, right now we think could potentially, for every dollar you spend on the chemical, it could yield a $4 cost savings. So none of that is included in our guidance. So we think there's a lot of upside ahead. And like I mentioned, like we're on the ascent of this takeoff. And this is an asset of the size and the scale that we're going to do it right. And we're not managing this business for the next several months. We've got a 50 plus year reserve life asset that we're going to take care of and make sure that we spend the capital to be safe, and all the capital and what you've seen in the capital reduction between our June guidance and now here in August. We've deferred any and all capital that's not related to producing and selling more barrels, maintaining safe operations, and attacking our restart at Platform Hondo.
Right, Gregory. I just add a little bit more to that. You know, the aspect of unintended consequences with the volume of the wells, you know, basically double than what we expected and so forth. It's overrun some of the pump capacity of the platforms. We got new pumps on order to increase that. These are all great problems to have, but at the same point in time, you can't get all the wells on that you want because you can't handle all the production through the pipeline. So we're going through that whole process, and there's also another constraint we have is it's a lot more oil than gas. The gas production is low, so therefore getting all the compressors for the gas lift restarted a challenge. We're working through all those, and there's solutions for it all, but it's these are all, you know, great problems to have. And that's what we pointed everybody during the financing to the fourth quarter of this year. We'll be up, well, all our marketing contracts, our marketing bottlenecks will be behind us. We already got, we have line of sight to that right now here in August, what we're saying by fourth quarter. And then all our production will be unconstrained and so forth. And we'll probably have some wireline results as well from there. So we're like everybody else. It's going to be a long, hot summer the rest of the summer, but we're looking at the fourth quarter and certainly into 27, really be able to show the asset we have.
All right. That's great. I appreciate the clarification and detailed response. Maybe we can just follow up on that point of the waterborne marketing angle, Gregory. When do you think the company would be in a position to move forward with that decision to install a sales buoy? I understand it's maybe a bit premature to discuss, but ultimately you want to try to avoid moving forward with that capital spend if the midstream constraints are going to alleviate themselves. Of course, there's other considerations when going down that route. So what market signals are you looking for over the next 6 months? And when do you think you would need to make the decision to move forward with the buoy path for a year-end 28 installation?
It's really regulatory. It's not market signals. The market signals are there. It's about at least a 50% improvement in diffs and so forth, and just having the flexibility out there. So we're looking at the regulatory aspect that we've got a lot of things, conversations with a lot of federal authorities on what we need to have and get done and so forth. And they look at this as an important part of security of the offshore barrels staying offshore. And so we're waiting to hear on all that. We didn't get anything done by the August recess, but this fall is going to be very active. Once we get that, then we'll have about 4 to 6 months of engineering, another 6 to 9 months of procurement. So it'll be every bit of summer 28 getting it installed and getting it put on there. So that's going to be hard to move that up at all. But under our timeline, we're right on that schedule right now.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Sure.
Our next question comes from Leo Mariani at Roth. You may now unmute your audio and ask your question.
Yeah, good morning here, guys. Wanted to just follow up on where do you think things stand these days with the potential SPR declaration in California? Is that something you think is moving forward at a good pace here?
Yeah, Leo, I think it's getting widespread support from SIPA came out with a big 12-page report, California Independent Producers, and it just debottlenecks the whole California energy onshore market, pipelines and so forth. It desperately needs to happen. It's going to benefit all the producers and all the refiners and so forth. Keep them in business. Just more connect more pipes, more flexibility. I think that's and we haven't heard any headwinds in DC from it. We hear about mechanics, and we're looking forward to seeing some resolution on that this fall.
Okay, appreciate that. And then also wanted to just touch base on this $500 million kind of no borrowing base working capital, I guess facility you put in place for the hedging. Do you see potential for there eventually to be some borrowing base and some ability for Sable to draw on that? Is that something that's restricted until perhaps you guys can, refinance the existing term loan and or the convert? Just trying to get a sense of when you might be able to get in more of a regular way, sort of a working capital facility.
Yeah, Leo, this is Gregory. Great question. I think the way to think about, increasing the borrowing base would be post, pay down of the term loan, the new senior secured term loan D. So we hope to, delever as quickly as possible and refinance and take that out, open up the borrowing capacity. And then also, once we bring Platform Hondo online, like I mentioned, we'll get additional PDP credit and then our PUD credit as well with the development program that we have. Once the term loan D capital governors are alleviated.
Okay, appreciate that. And I guess just on the more fulsome refi, in 2027, which you guys certainly spoke to post the reserve report here, can you maybe give us a little bit more color on kind of what the current thinking would be after that happens, if it's all successful in terms of trying to return capital to shareholders? Do you guys kind of try to get a buyback going first, then maybe a dividend comes down the road if you guys are able to reduce the share count? Just want to get kind of management's current thinking on how that could proceed.
Yeah, all of the above. The aspect, I think, initially be some type of dividend, and then we'll depending on what oil prices are on the stock buyback, is where the board's thinking at this point in time. But right now, it's getting our balance sheet in good shape, and that's why amortizing the debt with the cash flows is acceptable at this point in time. We've got the real capital light program to keep our production maintained and so forth, and all the improvements are within our control. So I think next year or two is making sure that getting the balance sheet into a regular way situation where we can have those options. But right now there's obviously going to be no cash leaving the system until we get the balance sheet under control.
Okay, thank you guys.
Our last question comes from Charles Meade at Johnson Rice. You may now unmute your audio and ask your question.
Yes, good morning, Jim and Gregory, and to the rest of the Sable team there. Jim, I'd like to go back to Leo's question on the SPR. If I heard you correctly, you said you expect some kind of resolution this fall on that, and that you've got some enthusiasm, not just from other producers, but also pipeline and refinery operators in California. What that you're looking for, what form is that going to take? Has there been any evolution, either on your side or on the government side, of what the designation would look like in terms of assets for that SPR?
Charles, you were breaking up, and I think you were talking about the designation. First, it has to be designated as SPR, and then you have the power of condemnation by the Department of Energy. They can condemn whatever acreage or whatever assets they want for the purpose of supporting the SPR. So that gives a lot of flexibility, plus also be able to connect pipes that are right now inefficiently not connected and be able to relieve a lot of marketing constraints for everybody. So that it's got, because you want to have as much oil going into the SBR as you want to have much oil going out of the SBR into the refinery. So it gives the federal government broad powers to make sure that the California energy sector will start being efficient and be able to maintain its current production levels, and also more importantly for us, maintain the refineries. That's the big thing, is support the refineries that are there. And will that restart of Valero Venetia? Not, I don't know. There's a lot of entrepreneurs around here looking at it here in Houston and stuff. But I mean, it could add refineries, but for sure at least keep the ones that are there in business. And we got broad support from that from everybody. I say we, the Department of Energy does. So hopefully we'll get that across the line sometime this fall.
Okay. Can you guys still hear me, or is it? Am I gone?
Yeah, you're good now. You're better now.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jim. Follow-up question on the declines you're seeing, or maybe the lack of declines you're seeing. Are you seeing any change in the flowing pressure of the wells? And and I'm curious what impact you foresee this will have on your updated 3P report that's coming. And just I'm specifically wondering, do you think how much history are the reserve engineers going to want to see before they give you credit for a lower decline? And are they going to give it to you just on the wells that you've been able to produce, or do you think they're going to give it to you more on a field-wide basis?
Yeah, we float all the wells, Charles. So, I mean, the aspect of that, and we'll have enough production history on everything to whether they'll be able to do it on a field-wide basis. And yeah, we're seeing no decline in the field, so it's a massive field. But I'm sure we'll all coalesce around a 6 or 7% field-wide decline going forward, which has been this historical, it's made 671 million barrels with a 7% decline. Eventually that will revert to that, and that's where the physics is going to be. We're certainly enjoying the production with no decline rate, but at some point in time, and when you get that pressure drop a little bit and the GR goes up, we'll be making more gas, be able to run our compressors, we'll actually be able to effectively bring on more production on some wells that have high water cut that we can't bring on right now because of the lack of gas. So the field will actually run a little better, and probably we can see a 10 to 15% increase in production volumes and also some gas sales at that point in time. So there's a pool, whether it's going to be this year or next year, is whether the field will start to decline, but it will at some point in time. So you can use that 7% field-wide decline. And that's what we've been steady in all of our projections. I think the Netherland, Sewell pre-production decline rates on their reports like 21%, 16% the first 2 years, which is just protection for everybody and themselves, investors, and so forth. And they fully recognize the way the field's performing and looking forward to making sure we all coalesce around that field-wide decline.
That's great detail. Thank you, Jim.
Sure.
Our last question comes from Noel Parks at Tuohy Brothers Investment Research. You may now unmute your audio and ask your question.
Hi, good morning. I just wondered, with Platform Hondo, you mentioned that it's in a process of restoration. Could you just talk a bit more about what's entailed in that? And I was wondering if any of it is in addition to what you originally anticipated the work is that you'd have to do.
Well, we originally anticipated a lot of work at Platform Hondo, like it's a 45-year-old platform, but the amount of work did surprise us. I mean, we've had probably about 50% more work than we expected. A lot of structural work that we didn't expect, and so forth. That the platform was in dire need. It wasn't near in as good a shape as Harmony and Heritage. It's just older and maybe less maintained from that standpoint. So we've taken it upon ourselves to basically rebuild that platform in place. And we're going to have a first class facility. It'll probably be the most sought after site in the whole field. It'll have new living quarters, new everything from the standpoint, but also the the controls had to be completely changed out, where the Harmony and Heritage controls just had to be updated and so forth. So it's going to be a brand new platform when we finish with it. We're looking forward to that. And because but also our gas sales go through that platform as well. So we had to make sure that was in good shape. The guys, again, have done a masterful job there. And we've got so many people and contractors there. We're moving logistics and people from other platforms, staying at other platforms so that platform to do work every day. So we continue to be safe and real impressed with the work that Caldwell and Trent and those guys and their group has done.
Great, thanks. And I was thinking about, in terms of geological work, sort of just what's, I guess, the first on the agenda for further testing of the Upper Siliceous, and sort of, you know, what's kind of the most economical way to go about that? I assume it's maybe recompletion up hole, and, you know, what sort of cost and would that be, and what sort of data are you looking for next there?
Yeah, well, the Upper Siliceous is going to be our main target for all of our reperfs, our perf ads, basically going up hole like we show in the illustration on page 17, and also to talk about it in 14, 15, and 16. But the big thing on Upper Siliceous is once we're out there and we have in a position to grow volumes with driller rigs, that's going to be our main target. And that showed up on page 18. Which is our location. We have over 100, 125 locations just in the Upper Siliceous. We've got another 50 locations, 50 to 75 in the massive chert. That's been the main producer just in the up-depth locations. And then we got to redrill the whole field again for the heavy oil. So the Upper Siliceous over the next decade is going to be one of the key development deals. And it's several of the most recent wells they drilled in 2015, I think two of them in the Upper Siliceous, some more prolific producers at this point in time. So we're waiting to get our hands on it. We're certainly not going to put rigs out there until we have our marketing, our pipelines, the bottlenecks, and all this stuff done, and refiners all in good shape. We want to take more oil, and then we actually can grow production with the two drilling rigs that we're going to put out there. So we're looking forward to that time, and then just taking these steps to get there very deliberately, and looking forward to achieving full cash flow and full production in 27. So we got some options.
Great, thanks a lot.
Sure.
There are no further questions on the line. This concludes today's Q&A.
Thank you everyone for your participation in today's earnings call. We appreciate it. Goodbye.